Hi, I'm Mandy.
And I'm Ben.
And this is Behind the Visa Window with ex-visa officers,
where we give the insider's perspective on the U.S. visa interview process. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Argo podcast. I'm really happy today that I'm being joined by a guest, one of our ex-visa officers, Lisa. Everyone say hello to Lisa. I'm really glad to have you on the show because usually it's just me and Mandy, but we're just individuals and we have our individual experience as visa officers at the posts where we served, but there's hundreds of posts around the world where visas are being adjudicated. There's thousands of visa officers out there. Your experience is going to be a little bit different than mine. There's a lot that's similar across the entire world, but it's always great to get the perspective of somebody else who worked in a different post. Maybe things were done a little bit differently. You've got a different experience with the language, with the culture in that place. And so we're really excited to have you on today, and we're going to learn about your experience. And Lisa, would you please tell us, what was your experience in the State Department?
Oh, I was with the State Department for 13 years total. And I served in Indonesia, Sri Lanka, Iraq, and France. My consular tours were in Sri Lanka and France, and I actually joined the State Department as a consular coned officer, which means that I made the active decision to choose to make consular work my area of expertise. And so as such, I was trained as a consular officer and as a consular manager.
Okay, great. And what type of visas did you do? Immigrant visas? Non-immigrant visas? Were you specially assigned to one of those sections, or did you do everything?
I've done everything, all types of visas in very different contexts. My most recent posting in France, I was the immigrant visa chief. And so there I really focused on immigrant visas and fiance visas, which aren't technically an immigrant visa, but falls in the immigrant visa category in terms of our workload as a consular section.
Mm. And when you're in Sri Lanka, you were doing on the line, doing the interviews, non-immigrant visa interviews?
Absolutely. We had a lot of students, a lot of pilots, a lot of people wanting to go to the U.S. For tourism. When I was in Sri Lanka, unfortunately, there was a civil war going on. So refusal rates were quite high when I was serving there, which was very different from the situation in France. In France, we had the pleasure of a very diverse population. And so we had a lot of third country national applicants as well. Whereas in Sri Lanka, it was more the local population and people wanting to travel to the United States from Sri Lanka.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I'm sure that my experience in China and in Colombia was similar to your experience in Sri Lanka in that it's not a visa waiver country. Anybody from that country that does want to travel to the U.S. has to get a visa, whereas in France, they're a visa waiver. And so what were the applicants that you were getting who were coming in for their visa interviews in France, since people with a French passport could just travel to the U.S. with by filling out ESTA and they didn't have to get a visa?
Yeah. So your everyday kind of average French person traveling to the United States didn't need to come to the embassy for an interview, which is why I think third country nationals really stand out in my mind, because they're the ones that needed to come, for the B1, B2 at the U.S. Embassy in Paris. In Sri Lanka, it was really interesting work because you're learning a lot about the local population and kind of what their dreams are and why they want to leave Sri Lanka. And it was a study in contrast as well, because Sri Lanka was a really small post. We were a team of three consular officers total. Whereas in Paris, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how many consular officers we had, but a very different operation. So, as a consular officer, a tour in Sri Lanka is fantastic because you get to do the whole gambit. You get to interview every visa category. You get to do American citizen services, fraud prevention, you name it. You're probably doing it at a small post. Whereas in a big post like in Paris, then you're developing much more of an expertise.
Right. And so in Paris, when you saw third country nationals, I'm sure that you saw a lot of people maybe from the French speaking world, maybe in you know, Francophone Africa that were coming in and who had resettled in France, maybe. Were certain third country nationals dealt with differently than others? Like, I'm sure that maybe someone from, let's say, I don't know, Senegal, maybe there's a large population of Senegalese. Are they seen differently or maybe at least dealt with more confidently than somebody, say, from, I don't know, Indonesia, where they, you know, somebody that you don't see every day?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if there was big populations, then it was upon the consular officer to kind of get to know that person's home country situation as well. Because when you're trying to determine somebody's ties to a country other than the United States, you know, if they don't have a right to stay in France, then you want to know a little bit about their home country situation to make the determination, you know, on the likelihood that this person's going to leave the United States after a temporary stay. But I mean, in terms of immigrant visa and fiance visas, it wasn't so different, with the exception of trying to understand a little bit the cultural context of, you know, how and when people get married, because it's very different worldwide than it is in the US. So we're trying to determine the legitimacy of, you know, a relationship, then you have to understand a bit more the context.
What were some of those cultural differences related to marriages and relationships that you encountered?
I think, you know, in the West, we have this very romantic notion of what marriage is, and that it should be motivated by love and only love, romantic love, that is. And so we expect to see a lot of enthusiasm. So, for example, if you're applying for a fiance visa, I think Americans expect people to kind of gush about their partner, or at a minimum be excited about their wedding plans, their dress, their ring, you know, the number of people they're going to invite. Whereas in different cultures, the emphasis can be quite different. I remember when I was working in Sri Lanka, you know, we all have to admit that we make mistakes along the way. But one of the lessons that I had to learn over time was that in Sri Lanka, the horoscope really matters in finding a marriage match. And as an American, when you're hearing that for the first time, that you pick this person because your horoscopes are compatible, it doesn't sound genuine. Whereas in fact, given the cultural context, it was a very legitimate reason to pick a partner.
Yeah, well, I do see that a lot of people do put a lot of stock in horoscopes and, you know, the star signs matching, but yeah, not to that same degree.
That's where I went wrong.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. That's definitely something. And do you think that you learned this, you got a lot better at recognizing this cultural difference as you progressed in that tour? And so, you know, people that aren't as experienced who are recent arrivals just might not know that much. And so that's kind of like that gap where the applicant needs to make sure that they're giving their story to make sure that the officer understands what that situation is. You can't rely on that officer to be a 100% expert in your local customs.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's one of the things that I talk a lot about in my consultations with people is, you know, this is the American expectation. If you're telling a different story, then, you know, try to provide the cultural context for that. And it can be something, you know, as simple as a sentence or two. You could say, well, as you may know, in my culture, horoscope is very important in determining an appropriate marriage match. So, you know, and then continue from there. You don't have to give them a history lesson, but you might not want to assume that they know things about your culture that are obvious to you. And so that's why I think, you know, it's really good to have a consultation with an American consular officer, because if you're saying something that's surprising to me as an American, I can let you know.
Yeah, definitely. So that's one aspect of the, you said that, you know, you were focusing on K visas and spouse visas when you were in Paris. And a lot of the relationship visas, let's say if it's a parent-child relationship or a sibling relationship, those, even if there are some doubts, a DNA test can confirm that. And so those ones really, you know, there's a way to succeed in those interviews in the end, even if there are some doubts. But when it comes to a spousal relationship or a fiance relationship, those are the ones where you really do have to prove the legitimacy of your relationship. You have to prove that the marriage is not solely for the purposes of immigration, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, you know, there's a variety of ways that people do that, whether it's through bringing photos or printing out their text messages and emails as evidence of, you know, a longstanding kind of virtual conversation, if they haven't had the chance to be physically together, which is so often the case these days. You know, of course, the longer relationships are easier to prove, but I think that, you know, you can overcome a lot of skepticism, even with a short relationship where you haven't been physically together very much, just by your attitude and your enthusiasm for your partner and your relationship in the interview. So that's something that I always encourage, you know, the clients that I work with in our Argo conversations to do, is to remind them this isn't a job interview. You're not expected to be composed, polished, and perfect. You know, it's okay to smile when you talk about your partner. It's okay to gush a little bit about why you're excited for this relationship and your future together. Like, let those human emotions shine through. And I think it's really tempting to feel like, okay, I have to have everything prepared. I have to, you know, say exactly the right things, when actually so much can be forgiven if the officer can see that the relationship is genuine through your emotions about it.
That's so true. And all it takes is a brief moment where that consular officer feels the realness of your relationship through your interaction, right? When they feel, oh yeah, this is a real relationship. They're not going to ask any more probing questions. They're not going to ask you, oh, well, what color is his toothbrush? Or, you know, what's his maternal uncle's first name? These kinds of questions to see if you actually know this person, if you're in a real relationship. If they feel that, if there's a moment where they just sense, oh yeah, this is real, that's all that they need. They're going to feel comfortable going ahead with that adjudication.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, most of our decisions are made at a gut level, aren't they? I mean, we're trained not to put too much stock into looking at documents, but to just try to read the person and go with your gut feeling. And so, you know, as much as we try to, you know, sparse out the different requirements, and are we checking the right check boxes, you know, when we're speaking to a consular officer, what I really want my clients to know is that the best thing you can do for yourself is make the consular officer want to say yes.
Right. Oh yeah, absolutely. Make it easy for them to say yes. Make their job easy. The consular officers are under time pressure. They need to move quickly through these cases. And if you make it easy for them to make that decision, they'll thank you for that. You're making their job easier. You're making their day easier. I want to run, let's do some scenarios of what might be like an applicant that I'm imagining you would find to be very easily approvable. Let's say that, you know, it's someone from France and someone from the US that are in a relationship. They've been married for 5 years. The American was working in France. They've got 2 children, aged 3 and age 1. They own property together. They've been living together, and now they want to move back to America to relocate there for a job. That's going to be very easy to approve because the couple's already been married for 5 years. They've been living together for at least 5 years, and they have 2 biological children together. There's just so much evidence there that, you know, if I saw that even without talking to the applicant, I'd say, oh, well, obviously this is legit. This is a real relationship, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially when there's kids involved, then you start to feel like it's an easier decision. But, you know, those applicants tend to be quite nervous, despite it all, during their interviews, because they have so much riding on the timing of the interview, I find, like, because they are moving their entire lives and just like, please, I really need this visa approved now. And so even legitimate couples can come across quite nervous, because up until this point, the IV process is really opaque. And the timing is very unknowable. And so, you know, when they're trying to buy plane tickets and sign rental agreements, like, they really need that visa interview to go well. So I find that applicants, you know, that you normally think would just breeze in can find themselves to be quite nervous on the day.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, so even if you have one of these cases where it should be immediately apparent to anybody that you've got a real relationship, that visa officer is opening up your case, and within 30, 45 seconds, they're trying to to ingest all this information, right? But it's an imperfect process, right? Or it's at least a super rushed process. So you kind of need to be ready to guide them through it, right? And not when they say like, oh, so how did you meet your husband? Don't just say a friend introduced us. Start telling your story. That's your opportunity. Tell the story of how you met. Tell your love story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know consular officers aren't always friendly, but to the extent that you can try to pretend like you're talking to a friend, that can be really helpful, because then it's not an interview and you're more likely to volunteer information. And the officer might cut you off, but sometimes that's a good sign. It means the officer got the answer that she needed, or is already convinced you know the answer and doesn't need to hear anything further. But better to be ready to volunteer some information than to treat it like an interview where they have to pull the information out of you like they're pulling teeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, let's throw out a different scenario, kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, where an American is not going to immediately feel how real a relationship could be. Let's say that someone from Sri Lanka who's been living and working in France for 5 years, and then his parents and his spouse's parents have arranged a marriage for them. He flew back to Sri Lanka. He met his fiance one time. She flew to France one time with the families, and they met and went back. They've met twice. It was a week-long meeting each time, and now they're applying for a K visa to go to America. Yeah, how are you going to look at this situation?
It's a really great example. I mean, and I do think that how a consular officer looks at that situation could depend on their experience, which is why, you know, you as the applicant need to make it, as you said earlier, Ben, as easy for the officer as possible. And one thing you can do is remind the officer that a legitimate relationship isn't necessarily for love only. And in fact, the standard is that to be disqualified for the visa, the consular officer has to think that the purpose of the marriage was for immigration purposes only. If the purpose of the marriage is for financial reasons or to please your parents, or it can even include, immigration reasons, those are all legitimate reasons too. And so you might just have to contextualize your story for the officer a little bit and say, hey, listen, like in my culture, marriage matches happen like this. These are the reasons my parents picked this match for me. These are the additional reasons why I plan to marry and stay with this partner, to demonstrate that it's a legitimate relationship, even if it's different from the relationship that the consular officer may have with their own spouse, for example.
That's a very good point. And I feel like another thing is this might be a little bit of handholding where you have to guide that officer through what a relationship in your culture could actually look like, right? Where I know that I have some personal friends who are from South Asia, but then who went to college in the US. And in fact, they dated just like American college students dated, but then in their late 20s, after having dated for love, let's say, rather than having a love marriage, they did ask their parents to arrange a marriage for them. And so, the thing that they could do to convince an officer of the legitimacy of that relationship, despite it not looking like in a typical American relationship, is admitting those differences, right? Yeah. You have to validating that consular officer's kind of suspicions and doubts and uncertainties by saying, yeah, I know this might not be normal. In fact, I had dated, for love, but just found like there was a lot of problems, and that someone coming from a similar cultural background as I do would really be preferable. And so in the end, I did agree to have my parents arrange a marriage for me.
And Mom knows acknowledge best.
Exactly. Well, I don't know if in my case I would put that in my mom's hands. I feel like I might be too Western to give into that. But yeah, I think that if you acknowledge some of these differences, if you acknowledge the part of your situation that might be the hardest for the consular officer to accept, acknowledge that it's something that's very difficult, right? And explain it, right? That's one step towards helping that consular officer trust you. A lot of it has to do with trust, and trust is built by openness.
The credibility. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, And I think what you said was so key, because it is about explaining. It's not about changing your circumstances to fit the American ideal, because then you don't come across as authentic if you're trying, you know, if your parents, you know, matched you with your partner and now you're trying to concoct some love story about why you want to be with this person, you won't come across authentic. Whereas if you just are upfront about the circumstances and explain it in the context of your life and why it makes sense for you, I think that really helps the process along.
So that's kind of general information about relationship visas. Is there anything specific about a K visa, the fiance visa, that you feel like is different from the spouse visas where people have already gotten married?
Well, I think the most important thing that people should know about the K visa is that it has a different standard than the immigrant visa. If a consular officer wants to refuse an immigrant visa, they're effectively saying to an American citizen, I have real reason to doubt why you should be able to bring your spouse over to the United States to live with you. Whereas the K visa, even though that process can be a faster process than the immigrant visa process, the bar is higher because the burden is even more so on the applicant to prove the legitimacy of that relationship. It's much easier for a consular officer to say no to a K visa applicant than an immigrant visa applicant. There isn't paperwork like there is for saying no to an immigrant visa applicant. And there's a lot of resources for investigating, you know, relationship fraud when it comes to K visas. So I think the most important thing to know is, yeah, you need to be prepared for that K visa interview.
And how should they, what's the best way that a K visa applicant could be prepared? You know, a lot of times people reach out and they ask us at Argo, you know, what do I need to prepare? What do I need to bring? What would you suggest is the best kind of evidence that someone could bring in to support a K visa, for instance, which is not going to be, it's by definition not going to have as much evidence in support of it as a spouse visa.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be said that different consular officers definitely have different personalities and different standards of, you know, what they think a legitimate relationship looks like. So you want to be prepared for any kind of consular officer that you get. So you'll want to print out, you know, the travel itineraries that prove that you met up, or photos, or the emails. Me, myself, you know, I'm a bit biased towards the emotional side of things. And so I'm looking for enthusiasm for either the partner or the wedding plans. It's worth noting too, that on a K visa, unlike the popular show 90 Day Fiance, where so often it seems like the fiance has gone over to the United States to see if they want to get married, the K visa is for people who've already decided to get married, and they should have some wedding plans in place to take place within those 90 days. So at a minimum, you'll you know, in terms of documentation, you'll want to bring proof that you're actually looking at wedding venues or guest lists or, you know, whatever the case may be. You don't want to come empty-handed and say, oh, well, I didn't know if I was going to get my visa, so we didn't make any plans. I mean, even if it's true that if you don't get your visa, you know, it would be very difficult if you had plans, you have to at least show that you've been doing the research and you have a plan that you're ready to execute should you be approved that visa. The other thing to know about K visas, people fall into this trap, and maybe it's a good thing that they fall into this trap, but I mean, I think you need to be especially careful about your social media. I mean, we definitely do, if we have doubts about whether the relationship is legitimate, we will check social media, and it's surprising the number of couples that we have found out are not really couples based on what, you know, either the sponsor or the applicant has posted on their social media.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I definitely had a client or a prospective client reach out one time and say that it was their family's tradition to get married as a surprise and then tell their entire family that they were married. And I said, listen, if immigration is part of your plan, you're gonna have to break this family tradition, because if they decide they wanna ask your family members about your relationship and none of your family members know that you're in a relationship or getting married, even if that family tradition is real, it's going to seem very suspicious. suspicious to the point where I think any consular officer would refuse that visa if the family members were like, no, I have no idea who this supposed spouse is. So I always tell people, you know, you need as much evidence as possible. It might not be necessary. When they ask you that first question, tell me about how you met, and you tell them the story and your eyes light up and they can tell that you're talking about someone that you're in love with and excited to get married to, they're not even going to want to see your binder of photos that you've prepared. They're not going to want to see, you know, those pages and pages of text messages and emails and letters that you've written each other. They might not want to see those boarding passes and hotel receipts from the trips that you've taken together, but you still need to prepare all of that. And the reason is because if they do want to see that at the interview, you want to be able to show them an abundance of physical evidence at the interview rather than going home and then having to just send it into the consulate afterwards. And the reason is because, like you said, that emotional part, that human to human connection you're going to have to the visa officer at the window, it's just infinitely more beneficial to you than just, oh, I'm just going to mail in some WhatsApp records, right? If you have that with you on the day of, it's much better than you go home, you send it in, because then they just receive an email with some WhatsApp records and they're just looking at text on a page. They're not looking at a human face and listening to a human voice tell them about their relationship.
Yeah, and if you do have to send in follow-up documentation, you shouldn't assume that the officer remembers all the details of your conversation, because the officers, they do see a lot of people in a given day. And so, yeah, definitely would be better to have them say yes while you're still standing in front of them than to risk them forgetting that rapport that you may have managed to develop with them by the time you've sent in your documentation.
Absolutely. I
agree with you.
And what are some reasons why someone might be put into 221G or administrative processing when they go in for their K or spouse visa interview?
Well, so 221G, as you know, is a term that we use for everything, any kind of administrative processing. So it could be as simple as, you know, we need you to turn in, you know, a police certificate that was on the checklist of documents you should have had with us. Or it could mean that, you know, a fraud investigation is about to be started on you and your case is going to be held up for a really long time. So, I mean, from, you know, as an applicant, I think it's really hard to know what the 221G is for unless the officer has been specific about something that they need you to bring in. But I mean, most commonly it would be for more proof of relationship. Or missing documents that you should have had with you on the day of. And different, you know, the embassies almost always have a checklist of those documents that you should bring with you on the day of your interview. So before going in for the interview, applicants should definitely, even if they think they have everything, it doesn't hurt to go to, you know, to the website of the embassy where they'll be interviewing to ensure that they have all the documentation that is specific to that country, as well as any kind of security issues they may encounter at the embassy in terms of what they can bring in. So like, for example, obviously, I mean, it's obvious to us, but maybe not to everybody. You can't just think, oh, I'm gonna bring my phone. I'll show pictures and text messages from my phone. No, your phone's gonna be taken. So, you know, definitely have to be prepared. Even the most confident of applicants have to do some preparation. It's so easy to get tripped up.
Oh, definitely. You want to be as well prepared because you might be unfortunate enough to get that real stickler of a visa officer who's also, you know, didn't have their coffee that morning and is just not, and didn't get enough sleep last night. Their kid kept them up all night crying and they're just in there and their brain's not firing on all cylinders. And yeah, you got to be prepared. I think a lot of people contact us and they say, oh, I'm in 221G. Can you help me? Maybe assuming that 221G is just the same thing across the board. But like you said, there's all different types of reasons why someone might be put into administrative processing. 221G, it just means your case is pending, right? Your case either is issued, refused, or it's pending, right? And so if it's pending, it could be for a number of reasons. There are some checks, background checks that need to happen that have nothing to do with what you said in the interview. They're just going to have to happen. You can't prevent them. There's nothing that you can do that's going to make them happen. They're just going to happen anyway. And so that one, you just have to wait for them to finish them. Other things though, let's say if it's your medical check that they 221G'd you for, your police background check was expired or something like that. Then it's very simple. They just tell you, we need an updated criminal records check from you, right? But other times, if you get a 221G where what they're doing is they're doubting the legitimacy of your relationship. They're saying, give me more photos. Give me your travel records. Give me this, give me that. Those are cases where I can still help you because they say, give me more photos. Well, what should you just do? Just mail in a bunch of JPEGs or you know, pictures on a Word doc. How are you going to submit these photos, right? Print them all out and you go and you submit them in the way that they tell you to submit them with nothing else. You're submitting more evidence in support of your relationship. They may have asked for photos, but if you want, you can include a statement. They didn't ask for it, but if it's included as a cover sheet for those photos, they will see it, they will read it, it'll get their attention and it'll change their thinking. So if in that interview, you were just very passive, you didn't know that you needed to advocate for your relationship and really express it, and you were just very passive, you answered the questions very, very concisely, very, very perfunctorily, and you didn't really tell your story, that's your chance. You do have one more chance. If they ask for more evidence, you do have one more chance. It's not in person, it's written, but you can still put a little more evidence in front of them to try to get them to see the humanity of your relationship.
Yeah, the 221G, when you get it and you're asked for more information, that might, you know, at first glance feel very disappointing and a huge loss because you didn't get that yes right at the window. But as you say, it is the officer is giving you a chance to make your case. You haven't made it yet, but I'm giving you a chance to make it. So you definitely have to make the most of those opportunities.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, this has been a great conversation. It's so good to be able to talk to someone who was the chief, the Ivy chief, at a post. And so that we know we're getting a very expert view from above of how spouse relationships work and what's actually important when you need to be able to prove your relationship to a visa officer. Because like you said, it's so much better. It's such a better feeling when you walk in, you've had all that stress, you've had all that worry and anticipation and excitement going in for that visa interview because you've been waiting as your petition was filed with USCIS, as it was processed at NVC, when it was finally sent to post, it was finally scheduled, and you finally get that interview and you want resolution on that day. You don't want to get this piece of paper that says 221G and you're not sure what they need from you. You don't know why it happened, right? With the correct preparation, hopefully, what we're trying to help our clients do is avoid that happening and be able to get that approval right there at the window on the day of their interview.
Exactly. That's what we're here for.
Thanks, Lisa. Everyone out there, thanks for tuning in again this week. If you've got any questions about K visas or about spouse visas, send them to us at hello@argovisa.com. We love getting your inquiries and we love answering your questions that we get on our Facebook group. And on our TikTok as well. Keep on sending them in. And hopefully we are able to help somebody out there pass their visa interview who wouldn't have been able to without our help. Thanks so much, everybody. And have a good week.